Hey there, everybody. Before we get into this week's episode, we just want to say thank you for stopping by. If you like what you're about to hear, go ahead and check us out on Instagram and Twitter, at AcidCatNewsNet on both. We also have Patreon set up right now, so if you want to support us in that way, go do that as well. And if you're here on YouTube, like, subscribe, follow us, hit that notification bell so you don't miss an episode. And we even have some more fun videos coming soon.
Enjoy the show, guys. Welcome back, everybody, to the As a Cat Spirit Hour. I got a little more energy this week. Last week, I don't know what happened, but I noticed it too, everybody. I felt like I looked like somebody had shot me in the butt with a tranquilizer dart right before we started. Like, hello, everyone. Welcome. This is what we'll talk about today. I don't know. I think sometimes when you're doing this so much, we've been doing it enough now that I get comfortable sometimes, and I'm just like, it's like, I'm surprised I haven't done this without a shirt on or something.
What's up, everybody?
Well, sometimes if you see my body language, I'm like this sometimes. I just get comfy during the podcast.
Yeah, you had the same energy as I had in the McFib episode.
Oh, yeah, if anybody has seen that, and some people have, you seem as though someone was holding, like, your cat captive on the other side of the camera while you were doing that. Like, so today I did this fun thing. I know you're not going to believe me, but I did it. Today we wanted to keep speaking of last week. We talked about a curse last week.
We did. We talked about a cursed car.
Yeah. A Nazi cursed car.
A Nazi cursed car. If you haven't seen the episode, it's awesome because if I told you the sentence, yeah, so last week we talked about a cursed car that was a Nazi curse that was prophesied by Obi-Wan Kenobi. You'd be like, okay, that's clickbaity, but I'm 100% genuine.
Yeah, that really is.
That's exactly what we talked about. Yeah, and so, the car killed James Dean.
Yeah, and several other people. So if you haven't heard that one yet, please go watch it. It's a good one. But this week, we're talking about a slightly more traditional. I mean, cars are a pretty traditionally cursed item. But today we're going to talk about a diamond.
Yes.
We're going to talk about the Koh-i-Noor diamond, which is a allegedly cursed, legendary, ancient item. Item of antiquity from India.
Less Stephen King last week, more Stephen Strange this week. With a cursed ancient item.
Yeah, almost Nathan Drake. You know, we're getting into like Tomb Raider territory here.
Very much so. And we just thought it was so much fun talking about curses last week that I went and researched some more popular, lesser known curses. Still ones that are things that are prevalent in pop culture, but that not a lot of people know about. And surprisingly, this one popped up because it's something that everyone's probably seen, but no one realizes that what they've seen is a cursed diamond.
Yeah, it's a big old curse hiding in plain sight.
And especially with what's been going on with the royal family in the past month or so, they've been shown it a lot. And people haven't been realizing that they've been staring this cursed artifact in the face.
Yeah, well, would you like to tell them where the Koh-i-Noor currently is?
The Koh-i-Noor, which is what we're talking about, the Koh-i-Noor diamond, is the centerpiece of Queen Elizabeth II's crown.
Yep, it's in the center brooch.
It is the big main one. It can pop off.
Yeah, and be a brooch.
A bracelet.
Yeah.
But we were like, oh, that's crazy. Let's talk about that.
Well, I like this curse because it's a curse, it's very Game of Thrones.
Yes.
But not the eighth season. It's very one.
Very exciting Game of Thrones, the eighth season.
Yeah, it's like the third or fourth season of Game of Thrones. But it's sort of a curse, not quite of antiquity, but a curse that that's basically been resting since the middle of the 20th century and hasn't really affected anybody since, you know, the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century. So it's It's a fun curse because it's like a dormant volcano.
Yeah.
Like, talking about it makes me kind of hope that, like, we're just two guys doing a tiny little podcast, but I like to think that maybe it wills out into the world that somebody will fiddle with this diamond and maybe we'll reactivate the curse again. We can see if it's real.
Get the curse going. And we'll get into it more why I say this, but this cursed diamond's a feminist icon.
It is. Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
It's really funny, especially if you read more about it on your own. You'll find that that's kind of a going trend that people talk about. It's like, yeah, this diamond might be, like, just in for the gals.
Yeah, it's in the queen's crown, not in the king's, for
exactly,
a reason.
Exactly, because there is no king right now.
That's true. There is no king right now. There hasn't been one for quite a while.
But before we talk about the present of the diamond, let's talk about the past of the diamond.
Yeah, we'll talk about, I mean, as an ancient item, an item of antiquity, these are the most fun. I mean, we make video games. We just talked about it. But, you know, like Indiana Jones, these sort of stories are, it's fun to talk about an old baseball card or something. But this is something that had been around forever. So it's an enormous diamond, originally allegedly claimed to be 800 carats.
Yes.
But that's, you know, you got to kind of take that with a grain of salt. But it was an enormous diamond.
Grain of sand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a very large diamond. And something to keep in mind is that not until the middle of the 18th century would diamond mining as we know it come to be. With forged pickaxes and that type of technology. That iron technology wasn't quite there then. So all of these were sifted for. And we'll get into it towards the end of the podcast because there's a fight over who should own the diamond because it has crossed country lines a number of times, borders a number of times, but there's really no evidence to support that if it coming from that time period, it could have come from anywhere else. The only other naturally siftable diamonds that you could find at the time were black diamonds coming out of Borneo. So if it was a translucent diamond like it was, the kind that we're conventionally used to, it was absolutely coming out of India at the time.
Yeah, it was coming out of prehistoric riverbeds in India.
Yep.
That's where most of historical diamonds that are that old come from, like you said.
So some of the oldest rivers, you know, that have dried up.
Yeah.
Are going to have some of the largest mineral deposits.
And they're well known for just being these, like, nice, pristine, super tight carbon structures. Super, like, I forget, they're, like, type IIA.
Yeah.
Is the grading, and they're, like, the most pristine, most expensive diamonds.
Yeah, and another thing while you're on that subject to make relevant to the conversation is that when we're talking about the size of this diamond, we're going to talk about it getting cut a couple of times, and that's because the way that diamonds are cut now, you know, rose cutting, things like that, setting for jewelry, that's not how diamonds used to be treated, because diamonds, because they are crystals, they form in really cool crystals. So when you're not pulling them out of the earth and they have a natural body that you didn't pull out of a piece of stone that you don't have to shape, they have a really, really cool natural shape.
Yeah.
So there's a reason that beyond that, these were seen as sort of mystical as well. We'll talk about that when we talk about the curse a little bit, but the legend of diamonds altogether in the cultures in India, whether it be Hindu or otherwise, they have a very, very prominent place in the superstition and the greater beliefs of the people there.
To talk about the changing of hands when it comes to this diamond.
Yeah, like who had it? Well, where did it go? Why was it a problem, guys?
There isn't a lot of written history. There's a lot of oral history. And so, of course, allegedly goes with all of this until we get to the written history in the 1700s.
Yeah.
But all up until we get to the 1700s, this is all alleged.
Yeah, and also pretty heavily debated.
Yes. Yeah. But the supposed first owner of this diamond was the uncle of Sultan Aladdin.
Yeah. Al-Adin.
Al-Adin, yeah.
Yeah.
Who was probably the inspiration for Disney's Aladdin, because like most Disney things was stolen.
From
other cultures, whether it be Africa with the Lion King or...
And in that case, Japan too. That's a shot-for-shot remake of an anime. Well, I mean, every one of their characters is from another story. Even Mickey Mouse himself, Steamboat Willie. Steamboat Willie was a movie, a silent movie that came out a few months previous to that cartoon coming out. Even that intellectual property stolen. But us bitching about Disney is a different conversation for a different time, or every conversation for every time with us.
His uncle supposedly first held possession of the diamond, and he was like, his uncle was also the ruler of Delhi, and Aladdin was like, cool, I want to rule over Delhi. killed him. And he was like, I rule over this, and I also own all my uncle's things. Ooh, including this 800-carat diamond. And that's what's said to be the first owner of this diamond.
He was the first person to said to have, like, who made a big deal out of it, revealed that he had it.
Yes.
Because if Aladdin did have it, he wasn't telling people.
And then it went dark again in oral history. Then it popped back up with Shah Jahan, the fifth Mughal emperor. He was very open that he owned this. He actually built what's called the Peacock Throne. You can look it up. It's a remake of Solomon's Throne.
Yeah, King Solomon's
King Throne. Solomon's Throne.
Yeah.
And it cost 4 times the amount of the Taj Mahal. That's how expensive it was to make this throne.
It was all gold and jewels.
All gold and jewels, and it... the Koh-i-Noor stone was the focal point of he was the focal point when he sat in it, but...
Yeah, well, because one of the legends of the Koh-i-Noor stone is that it was once the eye, it sat as the eye in a holy statue, which mm-hmm. is not true.
Not
true. It
comes
up a lot.
That's been 100% debunked.
Yeah, but it did, because of that, it was set in this throne. And that, I mean, what a sight that would have been.
Oh, yeah.
This, to give, I mean, we... To give it a sense of, you know, 800 carat, that's huge. That's mm-hmm. that's like the size of a loaf of bread. But this would eventually make its way down to about the size of an egg. But even then, that's an enormous diamond.
It's a huge diamond.
Yeah, think about, I don't know, you think about like the farmhouse moms that are flashing their tacky rings, you know. And
it's like 16 carat.
Yeah.
And they're like, look at it. And everyone's like, that is huge. We're talking 10 times that amount.
This is the size of a potato.
But originally, possibly almost 100 times that amount.
Yeah, that's a big diamond.
It's a huge diamond.
It's a big thing to just find on the ground.
Shah Jahan put it into the Peacock Throne, yep. was very like, check out this awesome diamond that I own.
Look at my cool throne.
Isn't it cool? Look at this throne. It cost a lot of money to make. It technically is a lot of money, just in of itself, because it's gold and jewels. And then in 1658, his son, Aurangzeb, who was like, oh man, my dad's getting old. He's kind of dying. I'm just going to kind of put him in their version of a home, which was one of their forts.
You're saying that in a very friendly way. Mm-hmm. That's not really exactly how the historians describe it. It's more, oh, thank God, my dad's finally given me an excuse to lock him up in a castle. So he puts him in the Red Fort to be like, you just go in there to be safe so I can totally go run the country.
So I can go take over the country.
Yeah.
And at the time...
And take your sweet-ass diamond.
Yeah, he like dismantled the Peacock Throne, started selling it as wealth, and cut down the diamond to 186 carats.
Yeah, so this is when it went from, you know, the size of a loaf of bread to about the size of a potato. And which is a lot of diamond.
He got it cut by... a guy named Hortensi Borgia, and because he cut it down that much, everyone was like, dude, what did you just do? And fined him 10,000 rupees for it. They're like, that was a careless act, man.
Man, I mean, he was just doing what he was asked to do.
Yeah.
Which is unfair on his part. It makes you wonder what he did with the rest of that diamond. You'd think he would keep it, because if it went, we don't know what it looked like before it was cut down, I guess, really, because there's just paintings of it. But I don't know. I have a hard time believing that there weren't big chunks you could take off of it, because if you're going from 800 carats to 180, there's got to be at least one decent-sized chunk you could break off.
Cause
You know, a decent-sized chunk that might be bigger than the diamond that you have. But we did look it up, and 10,000 rupees nowadays is about 150 USD. So... You know, at the time, in the 18th century, that was a lot of money. That was a hefty fine for just... I would imagine that fine had to come on the back end of assuming he stole some of it.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
But...
Being like, why'd you cut off so much? And he's like, And they're like, well, you probably sold it. You're going to give us that money back.
Now, there's a lot of... We haven't touched into the curse too much, because we'll get to the cursed side of the possession, because we're just getting into the beginning of it. But there are definitely... there were legends beforehand with the Koh-i-Noor that it was a dangerous thing, that it was a dangerous diamond. The Hindus have a belief that diamonds can, the sort of moonstone idea that we have, that item can be cursed.
Yeah.
That, or specifically that a diamond or gem could be, comes from a story, a Hindu origin story, and it tells the story of Krishna finding a large diamond, and then that diamond causing him nothing but bad luck in the pursuit of the diamond.
He gives it to someone else. It doesn't affect Krishna because he's a deity. He's a god.
Yeah.
And
they call it the Symptomatica Stone, right?
Yes. And he is worthy to hold it, but anyone that's less than worthy, like Mjolnir, essentially, it causes nothing but trouble. So he gives it to a guy.
Imagine if that's how Mjolnir was. Like, you could pick it up, but it would just fuck shit up. Or you'd throw it at something and it would hit a kid or something.
He gives it to the guy. The guy's, like, walking through the woods and gets attacked by a lion creature. Kills him. Then it is given to, like, his father. His father holds on to it. Gets decapitated. And then they end up just giving it back to Krishna. They're like, have this back, man.
Yeah, just keep it.
It's causing nothing but trouble for us. And he's like, all right, I'll take it back. It's a cool stone.
Yeah.
But so that's where,
I'll put it in my throne. But yeah, so there is a, and while that isn't immediately a diamond, in this case, there definitely would have been a diamond. So there is an idea of bad luck that comes with it.
It getting cut down was in 1658.
Okay.
Then it's held in that possession until 1739. Where Delhi was invaded by Nadir Shah, who was the Shah of Persia.
Yeah.
And
came in from the north.
Looted everything that the Mughals had, like millions of rupees, a bunch of jewels, and the cornerstone, which wasn't called that yet. But when he found it, he grabbed it, he picked it up, and he said, this is the grandest diamond. This is the Mountain of Light. He said, I could take all these lesser jewels, have a strong man throw them in all four corners, wherever they land, fill all that space up with this gold, and this diamond is still going to be worth more than all of that combined.
That's a sick definition for Mountain of Light.
It is. Yeah. Being like, I'm going to take four jewels, I'm going to toss them in each direction as I can, fill that all empty space with gold, hold this up in the air, this worth more than all that.
I'm pretty sure this is a Mr. Beast video.
How many gold is this diamond worth?
How many diamonds can we fill in my friend's backyard?
Last person to hold on to this diamond stays alive. And Chandler's like, aww. Gets his neck snapped.
His face just melts from the inside out.
But that's how the Kohinoor Stone gets its name. Okay. It's Persian for Mountain of Light.
Okay.
And so, yeah, when he invaded Delhi, took over, took all the Mughal stuff, he found it. He's like, this is sick. Look, guys, it's the Mountain of Light. And everyone's like, oh, that's the Mountain of Light.
It's actually currently sitting at the top of the Luxor Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada.
This is where the kind of curse begins.
Okay.
Because he finds it. He steals it and he names it.
Oh, there we go.
So okay. He goes, cool, I stole this. This is the Mountain of Light.
Well, and specifically, he's also Persian.
Yes.
And he's stealing an Indian item, in this case, a Hindu item, a Mughal item,
mm-hmm.
and something that they worship. And we should point out, this is like an S-tier gem to them.
Yes.
This is the most important thing to them. Diamonds, there's nothing more important to them than diamonds.
Yes.
So to steal it from them, you're not just, this isn't the regular loot.
Yeah.
You know, like that's an especially personal thing to steal.
So what happens is he gets assassinated.
Immediately.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And when he gets assassinated, chaos breaks out amongst all of his descendants.
Well, understandably.
They want to find out who's going to take over for him.
Yeah.
And everyone along the way is either murdered, executed by another, like, family member, or even just blinded by, like, hot irons. And one of whom actually gets control of it. He is Shah Rukh.
Yeah.
He actually gets the diamond as a gift, and he's like, okay, I guess I'm in charge now. He then gets it, he gives it to his grandfather's ex-general and the ruler of Afghanistan, Ahmad Shah, and he's like, hey man, I'll give you this if you help me reclaim everything. And he's like, all right, we'll do that. We'll bring peace to...
Yeah, my family's a mess. They're blinding everybody.
Yeah.
They're trying to stop anybody from taking over. Will you come help me? I'll give you our sacred diamond, which is actually somebody else's sacred diamond that
exactly.
I went ahead and named.
So they gain control. Shah Rukh and... Oh, man, I just saw it. Ahmad Shah. They finally get control, but in 1773, Ahmad dies, and Rook loses power over the nation again. All things break loose again, and the curse continues.
Okay.
So, like I said, the general dies, all hell breaks loose in Persia again, and he gets kidnapped by a eunuch.
Oh, that's cold.
Yes, that's also why a lot of people will compare it to Game of Thrones, is because there's the eunuch in Game of Thrones that is very...
Devious
and twisted.
Yeah.
But this eunuch, his name's Aga Muhammad Khan.
Aga Khan! Shergar's back. Does this have to do with a horse?
It doesn't. What it does
is this the backstory to how Muammar Gaddafi stole Shergar? If you guys haven't heard that episode, this is the second episode plug, but that's a good one.
Yes, that is a fun one. Yeah. That one is close to home with my family.
Yeah, yeah, a horse racing family.
But the eunuch captures Rook and also subsequently captures control of Persia. And he's like, cool, I'm in charge now. Where's this diamond I've been hearing about?
Like with a toothpick in his mouth and his feet up on the desk?
Yeah.
Hey, where's, I'm not looking for women. There's a diamond. I'm told there was a diamond.
And he's like, Shah Rukh is like, I don't have it, man. Like, I gave it away, to the dude who just died, like, recently. I don't know where it is. And he's like, well, I know you're lying.
This right here is, like, legitimate Game of Thrones stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you think the way that he... I'll just let you tell him, and then I'll talk about it, because I don't want to ruin it. Tell him what he did to this guy. What does this bastard with no dick decide to do?
So the eunuch is like, come on.
He's a bastard with no dick.
So the dickless bastard is like, come on, Shah, I know you got this stone. Just tell me where it is. And he's like, no, I gave it to Afghanistan. And he's like, I know you didn't give it to Afghanistan. That's ridiculous. So what Aga Khan did... was he tied him to a chair, shaved his head, took clay, a mixture of clay and paste. In history, it's written as paste. Could be clay. Not well known what it is.
Or all that important.
Yeah. Builds a circle on his head. And you're thinking, oh, well, why? Pours molten lead in it.
Dude, it's so intense. You told me that. That's like, god damn. That's medieval torture. Like, think about Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
And... you know, like, sonic torture and water torture and humiliation.
Making them, like, butt-chug hamburgers, essentially.
Yeah, like, all of that stuff is dehumanizing and terrible. But what they did not, and I'm not defending Guantanamo Bay, but it's wild to think that a way they used to get information was, I don't know, dude. Like, he's doing, you know that when you make the little clay log, he's, like, rolling it around?
He rolled a snake and then, like, went around this guy's head and just... poured molten lead into it.
Just molten lead.
And the way it's written in a bunch of historical documents that I found is the molten lead formed a gory crown.
Of course it did, because it's going to settle in... oh, God.
And, like, build up as it cools while he's pouring it.
It's going to melt through your skull like thermite.
And then it just... again, he was telling the truth. He was like, hey, man... don't have the stone. It's in Afghanistan. And he's like, no, it isn't. Does this. He's like, how's your story now? And he's like, well, I'm in a lot of pain. Doesn't change the fact that the stone's in Afghanistan. And he's like, I give up, man. Shah soon shortly dies after.
Yeah.
Because he just had molten lead poured on his head.
Yeah, it turns out that's not an easy way That's not an easy thing to survive.
Yeah, not at all.
Yeah.
So where the stone was, spoiler alert, in Afghanistan, he was telling the truth.
Where the guy who was getting molten lead poured on his head said it was.
And so when Ahmad Shah died, that's the guy from Afghanistan that he gave it to.
Yeah, his ally.
Who died, and that's what caused Persia to fall under a bunch of stress again.
Yeah.
He had it in his possession. He died. Afghanistan also kind of goes under this weird conflict of power. Who's going to be in charge? People do take over. His grandson, Zaman, ends up taking it. And when someone else takes over Afghanistan, he gets imprisoned by his brothers. His brothers usurp the throne, imprison him. And he's like, well, I'm in prison, but I do have this diamond that everyone's after. Puts it in the plaster walls of his cells and keeps it safe there for a while.
So before we jump to where it goes to next, first of all, love that it's... in a wall. That's beautiful. But this is the most Game of Thronesy. Like, it's such medieval drama.
This is like if you fuse together Game of Thrones and Uncut Gems.
Yeah, it is. It's a, if one of the Lannisters lost Kevin Garnett's ring. No, it's
I believe it's Garnet.
I'm cutting that joke out.
No!
It's just so dramatic. Like, we think about what happened in January and, like, storming the Capitol, and that was wild. And, you know, those people are getting arrested, and fuck, man. But this is so, like, you think about how Ted Cruz was probably culpable in that, and how, like, some of these other terrible GOP officials were involved, you know, Lauren Boebert and these people, and this dude's brothers locked him in prison. The last guy got a molten lead crown. People were getting blinded. Like, stand in a line while we blind you so you can't take over the country kind of stuff. It's what we've come a long way is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Zaman, who's in prison, he reaches out to Ahmad Shah Durrani, okay, who founded the Afghan Empire. And he was like, hey man, I'm in prison. My brothers put me in prison. I saved this legendary diamond. I'll give it to you if you give me, like, solace. If you help me out, if you support me, you let me come to Afghan, I'll give you this diamond. And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Give me asylum, you can have my diamond.
Gets in his possession, and one of his descendants, Suja Shah Durrani, ends up wearing it as a bracelet. And he is very much, like, open and like, hey, look at this sick bracelet.
Well, and it, you know what's interesting is every single person who has this diamond, the curse, you know, like, it's not just that it hurts people. You just cannot hang on to it. It will not be held.
It forces you to give it to someone else.
Since it's been stolen, like, it just won't let you keep it. You can't have it if it's stolen.
Specifically, if you keep it and you flaunt it.
Yeah.
Because this guy kept it and held it, like, hid it, and it ended up aiding him out of a bad situation.
Oh, that's true.
But if you hold it and you flaunt it, that's when shit happens.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, you know, there, to go back to the Hindu beliefs, they did say that, you know, diamonds, stories claim that diamonds bring you women, and that they bring you happiness, and that they bring you a lot of, like, you know, it's superstitious, but it's ironic now when you think about it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's also the De Beers marketing
it's
campaign.
Clout.
Yeah, it's just, that's what they do to get you to buy a big ring for your spouse. But it's funny to think that, like, their traditional beliefs were that it would do that. So it would make sense that if this is an item, as we talked about last week, if this is a object of power, you know, if it's something that has been occupied by a force, it would make sense that it would care how you chose it. Like, if the belief is diamonds are amazing and they'll bring you fortune if you don't share them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you have one and you're modest enough to keep it a secret, it would explain why, I mean, it would also explain why Aladdin never told anybody he had it.
Yeah.
He probably was following that traditional belief that was like, oh shit, I have this crazy big lucky stone, but I can't tell anybody because if I do, it becomes an unlucky stone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So in 1809, Shuja formed an alliance with the UK to help defend against Russia.
Yeah.
Russia was potentially going to invade Afghanistan.
It's been a long occurring problem for Afghanistan.
Yeah. It's almost like a lot of countries invade them for little to no reason other than oil and wealth.
Yeah, yeah. And back then, just religious precedent. The Russians just believed that land was theirs.
While it was in good faith that he made this alliance, not a lot of people liked the alliance.
Sure.
And he was quickly overthrown.
How could you? Yeah.
He's like, hey guys, don't worry. I made an alliance with the UK. And they're like, huh? The shitty people?
Hey, listen, I know they have this reputation for offering to help everybody and then they just take all your shit and claim your stuff. But they're not going to do that here. They promised me.
So he was quickly overthrown and fled to Lahore, where the leader of Lahore and the founder of the Sikh Empire, Ranjit Singh,
baby,
was like, oh yeah, you can totally stay here, man. Totally fine. I'll keep you safe. Hey, about that diamond, though. Like, it's not going to be fucking cheap keeping you here.
Well, also pointing out that diamond was now back in India.
Yes.
You know, and that matters. That matters a lot. Like, yeah, he's charging him to stay there, but also he has the opportunity to bring the Coronor back to... That's fantastic.
Yes.
And he was also pretty outspoken about his affinity for that diamond.
Very much so.
And its place in not only the religion, but the rule of Kashmir. Like, it was an important thing.
He took possession back of it in 1813, and he fixed it to the front of his turban. He was very, like, proud that he brought it back, very proud that he owned it. But as we shortly just said a little bit ago, if you're proud and flaunt this diamond, great things don't happen to you.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, there's been a decent amount of drama in the possession of this diamond, but with the Singhs is when things get, like, truly red wedding, like, brutal. Yeah, there's been torture and a little bit of unfortunate luck, but the Singhs went to war over this thing.
So, he puts it on the front of his turban, always is wearing it, always is proud about it.
I just want to point out that Ranjit Singh was a leader who was, in all other cases, extremely modest. He wouldn't serve, he never sat on the throne, he insisted that it was reserved for the guru. He was a very modest person in his rule, but he was not modest about the Coronor. It was,
when it came to, like, his appearance and stuff.
Yeah.
He was very eccentric, very outspoken.
Yeah, he was known to wear women's clothing. He was a very, like, colorful, fun guy. He had this really long white beard. Mm-hmm. Was kind of an odd person, feature-wise.
He would parade around on elephants. Yeah. Just to be like, guys, check it out. I got the Coronor Stone back.
But part of that is exactly that. It's this legacy that, like, I, as the fated leader of this region...
Got it back.
Yeah, I got our sacred item back. And... Yeah. We didn't bring it up at the beginning, but the Coronor was at the time one of the largest diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anymore.
No, it's the 90th.
Which is, that's not even worth saying. Who wants to say 90th? That's like,
it's in the top 100, but there's also 89 other diamonds bigger than it.
I feel like once a thing gets far enough away from being in a top number you want it to be in, that's when you say percentile.
Yeah.
It's in the 90th percentile of all diamonds in the world. Like, that sounds okay, because nobody really understands what percentile means. But I just feel like, you know, it's not that flattering, but it was a very large diamond. And again, in terms of these pre-manufactured diamonds, like, before diamond mines, before Brazil starts mining diamonds, before South Africa starts doing it, like, or all of Africa, rather, sorry. But South Africa was early and very prominent. You have a pretty big diamond on your hands.
Yeah.
So it would make sense to, like, want to walk around. I mean, we brought it up earlier, but, you know, newly engaged people will flex their wedding rings. This dude was just like, guys, I did it! I got it back! I am India!
He would also wear it on an armlet during major festivals and would take it all, like, wherever he traveled, he'd take it with him. And he would also put it on exhibit when prominent leaders and stuff would come visit. Especially British officers.
Yeah, well, because, you know, he wants to show that he did it.
Yeah.
Look, I miss... Because we should also keep in the conversation here that at this time period, this is when India wasn't entirely a country.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of a city-owned territory, you know? The East India Trading Company pretty much owned all of the country.
Yeah.
You know, the Raj was appointed by British rule. These are the people they wanted to impress the most.
That he got it in 1813, and over the past 20 years, flaunted it, whatever. In June 1839, he suffered his third stroke.
Whew.
So
the man liked to party.
He did. And it became very apparent to everyone around him that he was going to die soon. And they're like, hey, what do you want us to do with your valuables? And he just started giving them away to, like, religious places, religious charities, temples, stuff like that. And he was like, he looked at his eldest son, Karak Singh. He's like, you're my successor now. He's like, I'm gonna die. I've had three strokes. You're in charge. I trust you. And a day before his death, he died June 27th, so June 26th, a huge argument broke out about where the Coronor Stone was going to go. They're like, some people want to donate to religious charities, to temples. Other people wanted to keep it.
Well, some people.
Yeah.
I mean, Rajat Singh wanted it to go to a temple.
Yes.
And his treasurer said, no, that's not where I want it to go. It belongs to the country.
Yeah.
But I think Rajat Singh astutely saw, you know, we're talking about somebody who was a leader of modesty not seen at that time. I think he was probably present of mind that this is going to continue to cause problems. And mm-hmm. also, we need to find a way to risk never losing this again. It can't be in a person's possession, because if a person owns it, it's going to get given away. That happened already. They gave it to Iran. Well, Persia. They gave it to Iran. Then they gave it to Afghanistan. It finally made its way back. Can we please keep it in this temple? I don't want it to go anywhere.
So he himself, he was
should have been buried with it.
True. He was too weak to speak, but he still not vocalized, but said what he wanted in gestures. And Bairam, the head Brahmin of his, insisted that the king was like, oh, he wants all the jewels, including the Kohinoor, to go to the temple. It should belong in the temple. And he was like, yeah. It says he gestured that this was correct. So like, I assume he was
eating some food, and they were like, Rajat, is it okay? That's where you want it to go, right? You want it to go over to the path? Mm-hmm. 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 he was nonverbal. His mouth was full.
So they're like, yep, wants it to go to the temple. But the treasurer, Bairam, had a different idea. He's like, no, it's state property. It's not his personal property. That means whoever's the next to rule gets it. Well, the next rule was his son, Karak, so gave it to him instead.
Yeah.
He was like, it's not going to the temple, it's going to him. So after Rajat Singh died, Bairam was like, yeah, so it's not going to the temple, guys. I'm going to hide it in one of my vaults instead. And Karak Singh and the Prime Minister, Dhyan Singh, were like, all right, guys, this diamond's not leaving Lahore. Like, well, it's gone through so much.
Yeah, a thing to keep in mind, you're going to hear Singh a lot, and that's because Rajat had a number of different wives, as is tradition, and a lot of basically everybody in this family is related to him somehow. So all of these people are related. So these two are like, hey, listen, we're protecting our family here too. If they're not going to let us send it to the temple, we got to at least keep it here in Lahore and make sure it can't go anywhere so that we can keep an eye on it.
Yes. So, like I said, Rajat died the 27th of June in 1839. And October 8th, 1839, Karak was now the emperor. He had been the emperor since his father's death. And he was overthrown in a coup by the Prime Minister.
By Dhyan,
yeah. And the Prime Minister's brother, Gulab Singh, was like, sick.
And Gulab's going to come up a lot.
He is. He is an interesting character.
He is.
But he was like, cool. I'm going to take that diamond. And so they overthrow Karak. They put him in jail. And they slowly poison him to death.
To kill him, yeah.
With mercury. They were like, we don't want it. We want it to look like a diplomatic coup. Like, we didn't kill him and take over. We took over and we imprisoned him. But we're going to slip mercury into his food and slowly kill him.
Yeah, it was. We want to make it look like we took over fairly, because he was doing a bad job. Now, go secretly murder him. And people wonder, like, this sort of stuff, you know, not to keep bringing it back, but the modern version that we have of this sort of royal drama is politics.
Yeah.
And imagine if politicians could do this shit to each other, you know? Imagine if one night Ivanka just stabbed Trump in the heart and was like, I'm president now.
Karak slowly gets poisoned, dies a year later, November 5th, 1840. And
a year, man. A year of mercury poisoning.
A year of
what
mercury
poisoning. What an excruciating year.
And his son and his successor, Nand Nuhal Singh, was leaving his funeral.
Yeah, this is deep curse territory. So his dad, he picks up the stone, becomes the leader. His cousin, who's also
Prime Minister,
geez.
Yeah.
Who's also his prime minister, stabs him in the back and then throws him in jail, poisons him for a year. He finally dies. His son takes over, and his son was 19, right?
Thereabout, yeah. He was very young.
Yeah.
But he's leaving the funeral, and as he's leaving the funeral, a stone from a gate crumbles and smashes his skull in.
Yeah, a brick, like a brick off a gate thing. But it didn't kill him.
He doesn't die. Oof. The stone crumbles, crashes into his skull, crushes his skull, and he walks back to the palace, and he's like, hey guys, head got hit with a stone, pretty hurt, very thirsty. Can I have some water and also some medical attention?
Absolutely parched. That, this is going to be the third callback on this podcast to another podcast we've done. But if you haven't heard the one about Meriwether Lewis and how he died in a pretty similar fashion.
Yeah.
He was shot and stabbed, but he walked into the lobby and was like, guys, I am so thirsty. And then collapsed. And it speaks to, cause that wasn't, I mean, that was similar-ish time.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not that far apart. It just generationally towards like what we think of now, think of water. The last thing I think of when I'm hurt is that I need water. This is the absolute last thing I want. I've been pretty hurt before. When I jabbed a wrench through my eye, I wasn't like, oh shit, you know what? I'm parched.
Kind of thirsty. But the crazy thing is, of course, he passed away, and palace doctors like examined his body the day later, and they're like, there's no way he walked here. They're like, his injuries, he could not sustain these injuries and walk back to the palace, let alone talk.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if he, so what do you make of that? Do you think he was murdered? Or do you think it was actually an accident?
I don't know. I think it was a curse accident.
We need William Dalrymple. He's like he's been our guiding light on all this stuff. He's definitely like the expert on it, but, yeah, because I wonder with all the, well, there's just so much espionage, the coup, you know. And he was a young kid. I could see them sneaking him. Because the way the story's told is that he was at the river washing his hands. And then he went to walk back up and it just fell on him. And I've seen that happen before in Hitman, when you kick a bag of bricks off a roof on a guy in Berlin. But I don't know that, you know what I mean? That's what it makes me think of. It just, that feels like a hit. But maybe it was, I mean, it's not like that would be against the curse. But he was obviously, I mean, you want to talk about a curse. This kid was going to his dad's funeral.
Who got poisoned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But his dad, who also, like, very, was using this stone as political leverage. And that's where we're going to start to see it change. Like, previously, it's kind of punished people for flashing it. But the people who try to use it to get ahead or get, you know, we're talking about an item that is theoretically ordained in antiquity from any sort of spiritual basis, and any sort of fated leader is going to follow into that very closely.
Yes.
So it'd be very easy to abuse it and be like, I can read the golden plates. I'm in charge. Mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah.
So after...
I just reasoned with the curse on a stone, but whatever.
So now that Kruxing's dead and his successor is dead, Shand Kerr takes over as Empress. And when she does...
Which was his mother.
Yes.
Yeah.
For the next 2 days after that...
Well, the reason that she was allowed to is because she was pregnant.
Yes.
She was pregnant and she was like, I know that my son has just died, but the next successor is about to pop out of me. So,
yeah, and they're like, cool. Pause. You can take control for right now. But Sher Singh starts just berating the palace for 2 days and is like, well, I'm taking over.
So we should point out that not everybody has like a thorough understanding of the history of the Indian civil conflicts, but there was a war going on at the time. So it was the first of two major wars. And the town, Lahore, was being sacked by Sher Singh, who was another one of Ranjit's children. Well, extended children that had gone on to serve and become powerful in the north, was coming down to Lahore to take it over.
Yes.
He wanted Kashmir, and in doing so, he sacked the city for 3 straight days, and the people were like, Chandar, listen, we know that your kid's coming, but you gotta let him in.
So, a already regular character now, Dion Singh.
There he is.
Negotiated.
Our silver-tongued Dion Singh.
A ceasefire. So,
of course he did.
Sher Singh takes control. Gulab, who has the stone, is like, hey man, good job. Here, have this. And so now, Sher Singh is in control, has the Coronor Stone, and Shond has her son, but it is stillborn.
Yep.
It's born dead. And so she's like, well, I'm just going to have another son. If I have another son, he'll become emperor. I can have the place back.
Well, when there's a... an alleged transcription of the conversation that they had when he took the city over, when she forfeited it, and he was like, she insisted and promised that she would not have another child, as not to threaten his place with the throne, but there's no way he's gonna trust her.
Yeah,
why would you? She's already gone out of her way to try to take over the country, and you just had to sack the city for 3 days. Why would you believe her?
And so he's like, I'm not gonna believe her. Orders to have her head smashed in with bricks by handmaidens. Yeah. So that happens.
Yes.
He
and those handmaidens were punished for it.
They were exiled, and
turned into regular maidens because they had their hands cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire time that they were, after they had been punished, once their hands were removed and they were being forced into exile, they were snitching on Cher left
and
right.
They were like, we were told to do this.
Yeah,
he told us
to do it. But yeah, so he sent and beat to death with bricks. Again, just the brutality of the age, man. Just beat her head in with bricks. And again, another person whose head was crushed by bricks. Her son's head crushed by bricks. This diamond seems like it does a good job of punishing the it seems like it has a very good sense of humor. If it's cursed, it has a very good sense of humor.
And you may be thinking, oh, well, what happened to Gulab? Gulab, he was like, take the stone.
Hot potato.
Yeah, and he said, I'm getting out of here. Goes back to Jammu and just takes a bunch of shit with him.
Yeah.
Just takes a bunch of golden jewels, and he's like, I'm out of here. Like, this is too much for me. I'm a big old oaf. I'm out of here. Just leaves. Then we fast forward 2 years.
He's the Hordor of the story.
Yeah.
Gulab.
So 2 years go past, the 15th of September in 1843, we got to think, all right, who's in possession of it now? Shir Singh with the help of Dion Singh, who Dion Singh helped another person gain control, and that person died. You want to guess what happens to him? To both of them, both Shir Singh and Dion Singh?
I'm going to guess they were assassinated.
They were assassinated in a coup led by Ajit Singh Sundiwala. You're thinking, oh, cool, another person's in control. Another person has the stone. You are correct. For a day. There is a counter coup.
This is why Gulab dropped it. He was like,
yeah, he's like, I'm out, dude. I've seen so many people die.
Being in his position, he's like, seen all these people eat shit. He's like quietly sitting in the corner, Hordoring to himself. And he's like, I'm Gulab.
He's like, I'm getting out
Gulab.
Of here.
And he's like, puts it in his pocket. Bye. He's it takes like armload of his fucking jewels and just walks out the door. I'm done here. You guys are fucking crazy. It's gonna kill all of you.
So there's a counter coup led by Dion's son Hira. So Hira Singh, he kills the assassin, and he's like, well, my dad was prime minister. I guess I'll be the prime minister now. He's like, I'm 24. I need someone like-minded to be the emperor.
I need another 24-year-old who's a fresh college grad we can put on the throne.
Instead, he installed 5-year-old infant Duleep Singh as emperor. He's like, nah, he's going to be emperor.
I mean, it's
and
a
I'm going
to
control
puppet.
Him as a puppet.
Yeah, he's perfect as a puppet. He's your nephew, you know?
2 years or a year after that. Not even. This was September 15th. March 27th of 1844, you want to know what happens to Hira?
I think we all know.
He got assassinated. What a surprise.
With the stone in his pocket.
Yeah. Then it goes dark again for 5 years. So that was March 27th of 1844. This child's in charge. Well, his mom's in charge. His mom is kind of like, yeah, my son's 5.
She's the momager of Kashmir.
She's like, my son's 5. Come on. I'm going to sit in the throne. He's going to sit on my lap. We're going to rule this country together. And like we said, feminist icon, Stone doesn't do anything about it.
Yep, totally fine with it.
5 years passed. It's March 29th of 1849. The second Anglo-Sikh War just ended.
Yep.
And there is a treaty.
This is the second of the wars we were talking about previously.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Kingdom Punjab was annexed to company rule, the East India Company.
Yep.
And the last Treaty of Lahore was signed, saying that the Koh-i-Noor and Punjab now belong to Queen Victoria.
And the Valley of Kashmir.
And the Valley of Kashmir.
Yeah, so I think the immediate question... So, nothing has happened since. It's been put in a couple different crowns. It's been cut down again once, but there's been no further cursage, and that's because it's been in the Queen's crown.
Yeah, so Article 3 of the Treaty of Lahore says, the gem called the Koh-i-Noor, which was taken from Shah Shuja-Ala-Mulk by Rahaj Ranjit Singh, shall be surrendered by the Maharaja of Lahore to the Queen of England. It is, like, that's straight up said in the treaty.
Yeah, well, so that's the issue, is people's first thoughts is, okay, well, so if it hasn't happened, like, nothing's happened to it, it arguably, if it is cursed, it's safe sitting where it is,
mm-hmm.
in a case and in the possession of a woman, a female leader. However... there are a number of entities that lay claim to it. As we mentioned, it came from India, but Afghanistan claims, Iran claims it. I think what, cause there are, it's five entities. It's India, Iran, Afghanistan, and by that virtue, the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might be Pakistan as well.
I believe so.
Yeah. All claim that the diamond should rightfully be returned to them instead. India probably has the strongest case for it. Modi did ask for it in, I think, 2018, maybe? I believe that recently there was a request. It's not been approved, and it's all but not going to get approved.
Yeah.
Because
if they get the stone back, they might have to give up Kashmir in return,
well, so that,
right?
Well, the English just don't want to give it back, and they've been pretty clear that, like... When I say pretty clear, I mean verbatim, saying things like, that's just not going to happen. Because the entire British Museum is an amusement park of stolen goods. It's an evidence room of the colonialism across the world. But there are a lot of these like sacred items. I understand keeping certain things. And I'm saying this as a person from an indigenous background. Like, I understand keeping certain things.
Mm-hmm.
But sacred items and stuff like that, there's no excuse for having them. So, the English don't want to give it up, and the reason that India isn't pushing quite as hard for it is, as you mentioned, the Treaty of Lahore does define not just the ownership, but the actual the borders of Kashmir.
Yeah.
And that's already such a contentious area, and it's been fought for so much over the years that there's no desire to continue to push that, especially with China looming over India's shoulder at all times. I understand why they wouldn't want to push to dissolve Kashmir,
mm-hmm.
but it's a typically shitty English thing that they won't give them their diamond back.
So the Treaty of Lahore has to be signed for it to get into Queen Victoria's possession, and there's another instance of the curse before it gets to her possession. But the Maharaja is still Dilip, who at this time is 11 years old. And he's like, I don't know how to sign this. He's like, Commander-in-Chief.
I can wipe my name.
He's like, the Commander-in-Chief, Taj Singh, you'll never guess who he's a loyalist to. Gulab.
Good old Gulab. Gulab.
He's like, well, I'll sign it, since you can't sign it. Signs it over.
He's like, oh, wait, the little kid? I bet I could sign that for you.
And they essentially just take the Koh-i-Noor, which was still set in the armlet that Dilip was wearing, was doubly sewn into a girdle, and was worn around a chain worn by Lord Dalhousie, and he was tasked with taking it to Queen Victoria. So, this is the last instance of the curse before it gets put into the Queen's crowns. And the curse hasn't heard of but since.
I did speak a little too soon. I insinuated that nothing else would happen, because this one is a pretty bad one. So allow me to retract my statement. Nothing has happened since the English got their hands on it. However, on the way for the English to get their hands on it.
The English doesn't have their hands on it yet.
Yeah. It's funny how this theft thing keeps affecting this diamond.
So Dalhousie has to take it from Bombay to Britain. Well, there's a 3,000-mile journey.
Gotta go around Africa. It's a whole thing.
Yes. He locks it in a double chest with three keys. He's like, no one's taking this fucking thing.
Yeah, maybe the ocean.
Yeah. Well, the ship set sail in April of 1850, and almost immediately, as soon as they hit the water, cholera outbreak on the ship. Like, immense cholera outbreak. Almost the entire crew gets cholera. So they end up quarantining the ship off of Mauritius, and they're like, hey, can we get some help? Like, the entire crew has cholera. Can we get some medical attention, maybe some provisions? And they're like, nah, you're on your own.
Oh, man. And that's like, you know, to give to anybody who doesn't know where Mauritius is, it's off the coast of Africa, southern Africa. It's down by Madagascar, which means that, you know, if you had gone from Bombay to Madagascar, you're at the Horn of Africa. You're about halfway on this trip.
Yeah.
And imagine being halfway on, you know, a several-month boat trip on a boat full of people with cholera. Like, and you're weeks into it at this point, and weeks into cholera, and you're like, please help us! And they're like, ew, no.
And so they're like, all right, we got to get some help. We're making a run for the Cape. So they do, and when they do, huge storm just ravages the ship, nearly destroys and sinks it. Like, is just absolutely hamming down on this ship. They make it to the Cape, thankfully. They get repaired. The rest of the sailing is literal smooth sailing. It's perfect weather. They get to Britain June of 1850. Days later, the deputy chairman of the East India Company is like, quink, here you go, Queen Victoria. I give this to you.
Look
now.
What I got for you.
Yeah. And like we said, since then, she immediately put it on her bodice, and everyone was like, yo, is the queen wearing a fucking breast piece, dude? That is shiny.
Queen looking sick.
It became a huge, like, point of attention, attraction. They put it in the Grand Exhibition of 1851, and people lined up to see it. And then they saw it. And like we said, this is a natural diamond.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like,
it's not lumpy.
Yeah,
it's like, naturally formed. It's not faceted. It is not truly cut. It was cut down, but it still had a lot of its natural features. And people are like, this is ugly.
Can you imagine, like the disappointment, like, the scathing reviews? With all of this hype about this super cool diamond. Dude, it's an ugly little river rock.
Yeah. So, in 1852, Prince Albert, out of his can, he was like, hey, we gotta get this cut down. Like, this is a cool thing that we own, but no one else thinks it's cool. Like, everyone thinks it's ugly, everyone thinks it's dumb, we gotta recut it, it's gotta suit contemporary taste.
Yeah, imagine how fucking, I don't know, imagine how shallow-minded and, unaware of cultural norms you have to be like, so we got this, I know it's a sacred diamond, but
it's kind of ugly. Yeah.
Can we, like, just make it look like a normal diamond?
So you'd think they'll just shave off some edges. No, they cut it down 43%.
Yeah, they cut a lot of it off.
And she's like, oh, cool, well, it looks awesome.
Yeah, well, because now, like, it just looks like a regular old diamond.
Yeah. And it was set in the middle of her crown. She no longer wore it as a necklace. She wore it on her crown. Fun fact, could be popped off, worn as a brooch, worn as a bracelet. It was like that way until 1901. It became...
I'd use it as a refrigerator magnet.
It's cornerstone.
Remember to pay your bills.
Or, in their case, their fucking...
remember to eat the poor.
Skin tone chart that apparently they have. Which is a big thing in news right now.
I mean, I don't know why anybody is surprised. Yeah, this is the end of the podcast, so we can take our opportunity to just rag on somebody. Usually we make fun of our weed dealer at this time, but this time we can make fun of the British royal family.
Yeah, well, at least they didn't trade the diamond for hair plugs like our weed guy did.
Yeah, no, but they probably traded it for adrenochrome, judging by how very dead Philip looks. Yeah, man.
Jesus. Hey, smooth skin. Yeah. I've never seen a ghoul in real life, but...
That's what he looks like.
He really does. Yeah. But yeah, then it's just been passed from crown to crown, and it is now...
But it lives in that case, or it sits on the crown. It doesn't really go anywhere.
Nope. And thus, the curse has ended for now.
I think if Liz really wanted to fuck with Harry and Meghan Markle...
Just give it to him as a gift?
Yep, give it to Harry. Don't give it to Meghan. Give it to him. Be like, hey, listen... I just want to wish you good luck. I understand. And she gives him that diamond, and then he dies the next day.
Probably would.
It's nuts, man. It's a pretty crazy story. I mean, it's not quite as, like, haunted as the Little Bastard from last week. Because that, you know, like, that was just, like, cutting people. It was so malicious, like mm-hmm. a Stephen King book. But this is so, like,
This one was all or nothing.
It's like a holy object. People. Yeah.
It was like, you hold me, and you're not worthy, you're dying.
Yeah.
And you're dying gruesomely.
Yeah, and probably painfully over a long series of time.
The thing that I want to state, though,
your
is...
Your eyes are going to melt.
Out of all the people that held it, and like we said, maybe the curse has this, like, subscript that's like, you can only hold it if you're worthy, otherwise I'm going to kill you. There's one person in the story who held onto it multiple times and never died. Well... of horrific ways.
Yeah, I mean, everybody natural does. Causes. And that's Gulab.
That's Gulab.
Yeah, Gulab, Gulab, Gulab.
Which, my thing is...
Gulab was the chosen one.
He was, yeah, but... Or he was just so aloof...
He's Hordor,
that the
man.
Diamond didn't care.
I'm telling you. He was described as aloof.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, and even, like, lost battles because he wasn't around.
Yeah, like, he's, like, the reason that Britain took control.
Yeah, so it's not that surprising that it'd be... Oh, yeah, you're totally, man. Like, he just feels like everybody's, he's Ralph Boner from WandaVision, you know? He's like, everybody thinks that he's actually up to something, but he's just an idiot.
So he is the next god, I guess.
Yeah.
He's the true worthy one. It's Krishna, all women, and him.
And Gulab.
But yeah, I just thought this was a super, super fun curse story.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I like how old-timey it is. We like to cover, obviously, like, paranormal and just, like, the eccentric stories, whether it be, you know, the sort of the sci-fi side of things or the fantasy side of things. And sometimes we get into, like, the darker stuff, you know, more the horror side of things. Not as fun. This sort of stuff, man, it's just, it's a blast to talk to. Or talk to. It's a blast to talk about. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. We really enjoyed talking about it. Be mindful. Don't be vain. Know that diamonds can bring you nothing but misfortune. Unless you are worthy. So make sure you are worthy.
Make sure you're worthy or a lady.
Or a lady, yeah.
Yeah.
I think this might all just be a marketing campaign for weddings.
This was all put on by K Jewelers.
Yeah, this podcast was brought to you by the kind people at K Jewelers.
Every curse begins with K.
All right, well, with that, I figure we can say goodbye to you guys. Thank you for joining us as always. It's been a fantastic time. Like, subscribe, or if you're following us elsewhere, please keep it up. We're having a lot of fun, and we'll see you this time next week. Bye, guys.
See ya.
Oh god damn it. Oh god.
Oh shit.
Oh shit. Okay, fine. Okay. Okay. I'm gonna get him for ya. I promise.
Are you gonna fucking hit him?
Yeah. Oh, he's hiding up there now. Well, we gotta shoot the podcast tomorrow. Can you do that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. You can get out.